Welcome, Svetlana.
Hi. I'm Svetlana. I'm a software developer. I have been working like that for over 10 years, and I love writing documentation as much as any other engineer. Today we had a nice talk in the morning about how to be kind to yourself at 3 a.m. in the morning. It was a nice talk about operational support from an operational support person of view. So I'd like to talk about similar things from a developer perspective. For that, let's remind ourselves what is actually a software development process. I'm pretty sure you know that better than me. So it all starts from a team. Well, actually, no, I'm lying. It all starts from a problem. You have a problem and you have a team. Teams go to stakeholders, experts, to talk about this problem. And team tries to understand what is it that we are trying to solve. Once we have a grasp, once we understand a little bit, okay, let's go back to our dungeon and let's hack together something and done, deploy to production, boom. And that's it, that's the whole process, more or less. A bit more details to that, but it's not important. Once we are in production, what happens is we get our customers. We get our customers and they start using our application, and this is great. This is great because we finally get our feedback. We're finally trying to improve the product we're developing. We're trying to make it better, make the world a better place. It's great. However, at the same time, we get some sort of weird and annoying production incidents. Like, I don't know, web server is down, or the response time from our server is really slow, or we can't save the changes customer making, or we're losing the data, or we can't talk to our dependencies. A little bit annoying, but we have to like drop everything. We have to drop everything and fix it. And at some point, we realize that we're trying to develop our product, we're trying to improve it, we're trying to make it better and better, but we don't have much time because most of the time we have production incidents and we just like drop everything and firefighting. And that's a bit annoying because in most of the cases, production incidents, they don't actually require a firefighting. Sometimes it's a little bit of a fire and it's okay. So at this point of time, we as a development team, we want to think about, okay, maybe we need some sort of operational support model, and we need to think about it, like, how are we going to deal with production incidents? Who is going to respond to that? And things like that. And at the same time, maybe we should write some sort of documentation and call it operational runbook. So at this point of time, I'd like to share our experience of actually writing this document, where we started. And it's a good point to start with the timeline. It's a typical timeline of a production incident. Let's say you have a pager duty or any other alert system you're using, and you received an alert that your web server is slow, that response time is less than, I don't know, 60 milliseconds, right? Next thing happens is Anna, who is on production support, she acknowledges, she receives this alert, and she's like, yep, I received that, let me check what's happening. So the next thing is what she does is she's like, okay, let me check the logs, dashboards, monitoring, metrics we have, and try to understand what just happened, right? So this is the initial response. This is something that you have to do regardless of the severity of the production incident, regardless of the impact of the incident. This is just initial response, trying to analyze, okay, what the impact? What is the impact? And to support this kind of initial response product, in terms of documentation, what you need to have is maybe just some simple page describing, okay, these are my expected alerts, alert type, and this is some links to investigate the problem. And in terms of links, what you want to put is, this is the link to my dashboards, of my infrastructure, this is my CPU metrics, memory, this is some business metrics. At the same time, what we found useful is having here links to our log aggregation systems. Like, I don't know what they use, like CloudWatch or Splunk or Sumo Logic. it's always nice to put the actual queries against the logs. So when incident happened, you kind of stressed. I don't know, have you ever been on production support? It's stressful. All you want to do is like hide somewhere in the corner and cry. And everyone is keep asking, hey, when is it going to be fixed? When is it going to be fixed? Well, I don't know. Leave me alone. So having queries and having this kind of help to find what's happening is really useful. So this is the minimum thing required for documentation for initial response to the production incident, right? So what happened next is you need to think about these things like impact, expectations, and SLA. Impact is how many customers actually been affected by the production incident? What are the expectations of these customers? Are your customers expecting your service to be available full time? Are they expecting it to be available overnight? Are they expecting it to be available every minute of every hour? So these are the things you need to communicate with the customers before providing production support. Because based on the expectations, you can also document it in this thing called service level agreement. Anyone heard about this document? Yeah, so this is just a documentation about the expectations of your customers. How often is your service up? What's the availability criteria? What is the expected response time? Who are the contact people if something happens? Where do I see the list of existing incidents and things like that? So once you initially respond to the incident, what you want to check, what you want to validate and estimate is the actual impact. Because based on the impact, based on the severity of this impact, what you want to do next is either nothing or actually damage control. So in the case of Anna's incident, she wasn't really lucky. So she probably has to investigate because web server is down, right? But the first thing she does is the impact is quite high in her case. So she wants to send an email to the stakeholders. And this is really important. Communication to the customers in terms of production incident is really important because this is the trust. Even if you have an incident within like, I don't know, five minutes and you were able to restore the services up again, it's very important to communicate it back to the customers because this is your trust. So in terms of communication, again, let's go back to the operational runbook. We have alert type and some sort of help to investigate it. And along with that, it's always nice to have a list of communication required. What are the emails I need to send? What are the addresses of emails I need to send email to? Who are my stakeholders? When do I need to send this communication? And which channels should I use? And things like that. So when incident happens, you don't go to your manager asking, hey, where should I actually, who are our customers and who should I communicate to about our server not being available, right? So after Anna sends this email to the stakeholders, she actually does a little bit of investigation and she finds out the cause of the issue. What is the cause of the issue? In her case, the cause of the issue was just the latest commit, right? The latest commit. So what she does is she does the damage control of that, right? In terms of helping her out with investigation and finding out the cause of the issue, along with the communication, we also want to have a runbook. And a runbook is just it's just a step-by-step guide on what to do. And what I mean is, okay, SSH to this box, maybe log into the server, check these logs, run this command, this is how you restart the process, this is how you stop the process, or maybe do nothing, maybe because it's an automatically resolved issue. So once you discover the cause of the incident, all you want to do is a damage control. You don't want to spend another week trying to solve and find the root cause of it, because all you have to do is a minimum thing required to actually fix this incident and make things normal again. So this is, again, a firefighting. I call it a firefighting. I don't know, maybe you call it something else. But for me, it is a highest minimum thing required to make things normal again. So once you do this thing, all you want to do is send an email to your stakeholders again. Say, hey, I just saved the day. Everything works. Everything is fine. The issue is still not resolved, but we are looking at that. And this is the reference to our ticket number. And we will contact you in the next 2 days with the resolution. It's very important, again, to communicate with the stakeholders, because this is a trust. And after this is done, you can breathe in again. You can, like, relax and do a proper investigation of this production incident, right? And in this case, I don't think there should be some sort of comprehensive documentation on how to do that, because this depends on the incident. All you want to do, okay, you already have logs, you already have dashboards and metrics. You want to probably have a look at the code and try to understand why this is happening and things like that. So in the case of our incident, Anna finds out the root cause of the issue, which is probably some sort of extra dependency introduced in the latest commit, and this dependency is down and it causes some problems with our application, and this is not acceptable. So what does she do? She doesn't fix the issue straight away. What she does is she raises an incident, an issue with the development team, letting them know, hey, team, there is some sort of issue. It causes a problem in production. Should we fix it? And then development team should actually prioritize that against their current work, because we don't want to go to this position again when we firefight. We want to prioritize this issue against the work we are doing right now and check maybe we are working on something which is actually more important, right? And the last thing after all of this is done, Anna organizes a post-incident review. And post-incident review, this is just my favorite meeting. I can't wait to hold it with Maya. This is going to be great. Me and Maya are actually going to work soon together. So post-incident review, you can actually have another talk about post-incident review and like how to hold this meeting and what do you need to talk about. But in terms of this documentation, what's important here is one of the things we talk about on PIR meetings are gaps which are identified during the production incident. Some of the gaps in the process, or some of the gaps in the documentation, or some of the gaps in the alerts. Some of the alerts maybe are too noisy, and maybe you want to tune them, maybe change the threshold or change the severity of this alert. Maybe you don't have enough documentation in your operational runbook on what to do. Or maybe you didn't have access to some of the systems to fix it. That's another thing with operational support. You have to have access to the things if you are on operational support. So post-incident review is another important and essential step which helps us to keep our documentation up to date, because the result of post-incident review are the action items which are targeted on updating the documentation. And here you go, this is the circle of life. This is just a summary of what we just talked about. It all starts with the incidents and when we analyze the impact, communicate with the stakeholders, we're trying to damage control it, we're trying to make it normal again, and then we take our time to analyze it and find the root cause, and then we're improving the current process. And that's it. Thank you.
Excellent. Thank you very much. And we, in fact, do have time for some questions, if you're happy to take a couple. If we have some questions.
Oh, not everyone at once.
I have your PIRs as well.
Yeah.
How often do people ignore all this documentation?
I think people do ignore documentation, but not this one. On my current project, what I've noticed is this documentation is one of the most important ones, because when things are going wrong, it's just yeah, it's way easier to go to see a page instead of actually interrupt your developers. But yeah, the rest of the documentation is completely ignored.
So what's your strategy for finding the right answer in the documentation, especially in the big projects, for people that are operational and stressed?
You mean in terms of, okay, there is a...
How to find the right answer and the steps to follow in the accident?
So usually when you set up your alerts, let's say you use New Relic or PagerDuty or CloudWatch, when you send these alerts to notification channels, email or PagerDuty or phone, you usually attach a reference to a runbook. Yeah, and that's what Katie was talking about as well. At 3 a.m. you wake up, you get a notification about something not working, and with this notification you have a reference to a runbook.
Hi. How do you keep those post-incident review meetings civil? Like, I've been in a few that have gotten pretty nasty.
We usually follow Maya's advices. but yeah, that's a good question. I think there are some templates on how to run it. And before that, it's kind of like a retrospective as well. We set up the context saying that it's a no-blame meeting, it's no one's fault, and we're not here to blame people, we're here to improve things.
With the taser, you do it with the taser.
I'd like to know how you get people to actually create and maintain the documentation. That's been my biggest issue.
So we started our production support without documentation, and we started to write entities based on the incidents. It was hard. It was really hard for me as well. I think it was just the team around me who were disciplined enough to write something in a Confluence after the incident happened.
So you actually make time for it after an incident occurs?
Definitely, yes. We definitely account for production support. We have, let's say, 6 developers and 1 person on a full-time production support. Yep.
All right, well, please join me in thanking again.